From Cafe, welcome to Cyberspace. I'm your host, John Carlin. Every other Friday, I explore issues at the intersection of tech, law, and policy with guests who've made an impact in the world of cybersecurity. My guest this week is Kara Swisher. She's the editor-at-large of Recode, the host of the Recode Decode podcast, and the newly launched Sway podcast from the New York Times, where she is also a contributing opinion writer. As one of the Silicon Valley's most respected journalists, she's seen it all, from the dawn of the information superhighway to the dot-com bubble to the current tech landscape dominated by a handful of companies that possess both an ever-expanding amount of power and an ever-growing amount of our personal information. Great to have you joining us today. And I'll admit, when I was early in this space and still in law school is when I read your book on AOL, which seems like a little bit of time ago.
Yeah. I forget. I haven't written a book. I'm about to write another book after. I don't like writing books, but I wrote two, actually. One was about the beginnings of AOL, and the other was many years later when they bought Time Warner and then the debacle happened. And so there was a sequel.
Read them both. And I think actually I may have done it in reverse order. And with the sequel, I was curious, you know, in the beginning, it was the story of how Steve Case triumphed over Microsoft. By the sequel, not so much.
Well, he triumphed. I don't think Time Warner did. He owns half of Hawaii and he's one of the wealthiest investors around.
True.
So
I know, he's all done
of
pretty
them
good.
Are. So they triumphed just fine. One guy is in the book, Meyer Burlow, is like making pots up in Vermont or something like that. And Ted Leonsis owns 26 sports teams here in DC or whatever. He owns several. And they're all doing just fine. They did just fine.
If you were to predict any predictions now over who's going to be AOL in a couple of years?
Oh, all of them. Every single one of them. There's not one company that's going to escape the fate of AOL. Now, they shot themselves in the foot quite a lot, but they were out front for a long time and actually pioneered a lot of things that we're using today. I mean, I think Facebook, I suppose, is sort of the direct descendant of AOL. It's a similar kind of idea. And eventually we won't be using Facebook.
Any time limit on that prediction?
No, I think that what's happened is this is sort of a winner-takes-all situation, and sort of AOL led the way and paved the road for something like Facebook to come along. And also, by the way, Amazon and Google and others. It had all those elements in it. It just had too many elements. And so, you know, or WhatsApp, AOL had all these things. And so, you know, there's an expression, the plains are covered with the bodies of pioneers. It doesn't mean California's not great and people didn't get out there. Eventually some people made it and created great fortunes. And so no matter what's happening in California right now, which is tragic, the fires. You know, it's typical of the tech industry and any industry that you have cycles of hegemony and then you lose them. Microsoft is a good example, still a very successful company, doing one of the most valuable companies in the world, but had, you know, sort of had hegemony over everybody and then didn't. And now is still a very strong company, but not the one that everyone is terrified of. So these things change or morph.
Well, as you know better than anyone, you know, big tech's really changed almost every aspect of our lives right now.
Yeah.
What's your view as someone who's covered this space, met most of these folks in person? Are the best and brightest in Silicon Valley paying enough attention to protect us against the threats posed by cyber?
No, I don't think that. I don't think they're protecting us from anything. They're like, they sort of have created, which I call, a constant purge. Like we live in the city where the purge is taking place and the rest of us sort of wander around getting shot at or shooting at people. And there's no government protecting us. And so, you know, they own this city, this internet city, essentially. And so not all of them. And, you know, one of the things that's hard to discern is there's no such thing as big tech. They're all very different from each other, right? They're not, Apple is not, Facebook is not, Microsoft is not Google, and they all have different elements that we kind of tend to lump them together, and some are worse than others. And it depends on the company, what they're doing. But the fact of the matter is they have unlimited access as a group to every person on the planet with these devices that jack into everybody's personal data and systems. And so it creates a situation where there's nothing but cybersecurity problems. And then it allows, you know, malevolent governments or just any government access to people in ways that are unprecedented compared to before.
You said there some who are good, some who are bad. name a couple. Who do you think are at the top of the list that are good?
Bad is probably a loose term, but you know, there's some that are careless. Like, look, Facebook, I think we can all agree, is the most careless of all these companies. And I think there's been copious examples, whether it's allowing anti-vaxxers to run rampant, or just recently a whistleblower this week talked about how she was making determinations in countries, you know, cutting off different leaders who are trying to abuse the Facebook system or not. So she was essentially a dictator of every country, you know, how information was, which is crazy when you think about it, some person in Palo Alto deciding the fate of certain countries. So there's some that are sloppy and have sloppy systems that aren't in place or didn't understand the repercussions of how important their communication systems they put in place would be. There are others that are less used, but are still very powerful, like Google or YouTube, who are trying really hard to rein in the impulse, the bad impulses of humanity and the abuse. But still, nonetheless, the platforms are built that way to, in order to propagate propaganda or hack into systems or just use these services as they were built. A lot of times we worry a lot about hacking, as we should. But at the same time, some of them are just being used as they're built. And so a lot of these malevolent acts, these people who do them are customers of these companies and just happen to use the systems in ways that are advantageous to whatever they're trying to do.
No, that's a great point to kind of divvy them up into two categories, like those that hack and use a product in a way that's against the interests of those that designed it versus they're using it as designed and we just didn't think of the nefarious use ahead of time. One of the key issues, when I was in government, we were reaching out. We had an active program against the former, in other words, against
the hacking. Sure.
And then with the growth of the Islamic State in particular and the way in which they were good at using social media to gain recruits, we started an outreach. And it was post-Snowden. And it didn't go well in the beginning. To put it mildly.
Didn't go well, how? Tell me.
In other words, in the beginning when we were having the discussions, there was a lot of skepticism about what government agencies were saying the terrorists were doing with the products. And a lot of disbelief, you know, saying my product can never be used this way. You're just wrong.
Well, now look, in that case, there's a lot of things. There's recruiting going on, which you really can't do anything about, can you? Can you stop it? Can you block it or things like that? That's just advertising, right? I hate to say it that way, but that's what it is. Trying to pull people in through videos or you know, marketing.
Well, you say can't do anything. I mean, there are rules and regs, like you don't have them advertising on NBC.
You got the companies to limit their advertising. I that's what it is what recruiting is, advertising. And so, yes, you can do that. And that's sort of explicit, right? That's the explicit stuff they're doing, whether they're putting up videos that attract young men, typically, I think some women were pulled into it, or they're doing, you know, that's explicit what's happening. And you can certainly see that, find it, and try to eradicate it, right? That's one thing. And then there's the ways of using the communication systems to communicate with each other to commit nefarious acts. And that's a whole nother thing. And that has to do with encryption and fighting that issue, which I think is a tough one. As you know, from the fight with Apple and the FBI or WhatsApp and encryption, there's all kinds of things that make it very difficult to fight these ability of these people, these players, to use these systems to hide their activity.
So what do you think in terms of where's the relationship now with government and some of the key tech players? There's obviously been a change of administration on the one hand, but on the other hand, there's also a lot more awareness.
Oh, I don't think it matters what administration is there. It continues. You know what I mean? The spying continues no matter who's in place. You know, look, under President Obama, there was all kinds of stuff going on, you know, and same thing with George Bush. And that sort of operates separate from, although, you know, Donald Trump is attacking the spy complex, but really, is he affecting it? Who knows, right? It still keeps, I'm sure it keeps going on, whoever's in office. And it's the question of how much control we have over that. And obviously, I think the major moment, of course, was, well, two moments. One was the creation of the internet by spy agencies, right? Really, the Defense Department, not spies necessarily, but it was a communication system. But it was also, you know, people understood its implications, all kinds of implications. And I think the last thing people understood was its commercial implications, which is where it's become so powerful, right? And made so many people so wealthy. But it was designed as a government communications tool. And so just the existence of it within DARPA was the beginning of all this, right? And so then you move to different eras of using all these different tools, whether they be surveillance tools or cameras or tapping into things or whatever. And you get to Edward Snowden, which I think was the great moment of, I did a pretty long interview with him just recently, where you get to this moment where he reveals just how much the government was using these information systems and tapping into them. And I think that was a really problematic moment for the relationship between tech and government, the U.S. government. I think it came at a terrible time because there's a lot that these companies need to do to cooperate with government to fend off things like Russian election interference or Iranian grid problems. There's all kinds of things that the tech companies do need to be in touch and in good relationships with the government around right now, of all things, TikTok. You know, I don't think they're the biggest threat to our democracy, but okay. There's more important things they need to cooperate on. But I do think the Edward Snowden thing really did put a wrench in that relationship in terms of that these companies were cooperating with the government. They didn't realize the extent that the government was still going around them in secret ways and manipulating their businesses.
So do you think it was genuine outrage and surprise and feel of distrust or?
Some of them, yes. I think they knew they were there, but I think in a lot of ways a lot of them were surprised by the extent of it, the tapping into the systems without their knowledge. I don't know why they were surprised. I agree with you. It's like, are you kidding? Of course the government spies as much. If it gets spy stuff, they're going to spy. And so, I think there was sort of an indignation, like we are willing to go through systems but not go around us in the way that you did, that we didn't have knowledge. Because a lot of their businesses across the world globally are based on trust on some level, that the spies aren't going to be in there necessarily unless we know about them. And so I do think there was a real cut. And then they didn't have the kind of relationship they needed to have as the Russians started to step up their election interference, as the Chinese moved in, the Iranians, all kinds of other players started to do different things, ranging from pure hacking to a much more effective way to affect things, which is misinformation and disinformation, which are separate things.
It was ironic in a way for a little while. So there was somehow we managed to lose a war of words and values with Putin's Russia over what's safer. And you see them take advantage of it. So you have this lack of trust post-Snowden, and into that void, Russia, China, lesser extent, Iran, North Korea.
Well, you know, Russia's a criminal government, let's be honest. Like, come on. It has been for a long time. And so here's the thing. They lose the Cold War, as they should, because their country is inadequate compared to the United States on every level, and lose it rather significantly. But here they have these tools that aren't quite as expensive as having tanks and missiles and weapon systems and Star Wars, whatever it is. And here they can hit again. And so the tools they're using are inexpensive and effective, which is to create discord here, to create problems, to break NATO, to, you know, they don't need a million tanks on the border. They need disinformation. They need to have they have a president who says bad things about NATO, but to spread sort of information and get support for those ideas. And so, you know, they lost the Cold War, but they're winning the information war, which is where you can operate in the shadows, and you can do in real shadows, right? And so we have not done enough to understand that is the goal, is to create, you know, I think people know it now, but is to create discord and questioning of whether it's institutions, or flood the zone with all kinds of weird content that is easily shared. I mean, these systems are perfect for propaganda in a way that's hard to ferret out and hard to stop once it's out.
So wait, just taking back, you said Russia's winning the information war. Do you think that's true today or was true?
Yes, I do. I don't think we've had control of this every day. You know, who knows who's behind, you know, and it's not just Russia. It's everyone who has, you know, a point of view, like the anti-vaxxers, right? They're now putting out, I just had some people from the Oxford Internet Institute and others on talking about what the disinformation memes going on now. And a lot of them have to do with, if you take here's a good example. You take the flu vaccine, the regular flu vaccine, and you'll get COVID. Like, of course you won't. You need to take the flu vaccine, right? And so they're trying to sort of get this idea that you shouldn't be taking any vaccines. And so that's just vaccines. And then there's the QAnon people who, you know, on its face, if you sat down with someone and said, there's a cabal of Democratic politicians that are trying to create a child sex ring, people would be like, what? Like, you know what I mean? But it creates this idea of information that gets around, and that's a whole nother thing. And then there's the Chinese that are very active, you know, in terms of trying to say that they aren't at fault for this, for COVID-19. And then you have the Russians trying to create all kinds of content that's confusing around Antifa and all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, it could go in so many different directions. And so as long as you're willing to make a mess, you win in this environment.
And you mentioned it in passing, you know, the TikTok, and it's an example currently of, there was a move towards what we call in government the all tools approach, which was the idea that you should look at each legal lever that you can pull from a department or agency to try to change behavior. And in some ways, the TikTok is, you know, a novel application of law to try to change behavior. In other ways, it seems like the communications around it have been a bit of a mess in terms of what it's trying to stop or not stop. But you were saying just in passing there that you think it's the wrong thing for them to be focusing on.
Look, across the globe, China is asserting itself technologically across the globe, whether it's 5G, whether it's drones, whether it's robotics, whether it's AI. And here we are arguing about TikTok. Fine. I sounded the alarms about the Chinese threat a long time ago. And it's the, you know, I don't think I agree with Donald Trump because I don't think he knows what he's saying. So, you know, I think it's just his latest, you know, today I think I'll talk about, you know, that 1619 project from the New York Times as being the biggest threat to American civilization, or that we aren't saying enough good things about America, or that Mount Rushmore, whatever he's saying that day, he just picked upon this. Like, okay, now it's TikTok. And so that's why this communications around this has been so bad, because there's no actual policy idea around here, which is that the Chinese government has enormous power via lots of things. And here is a product that, the first real product that has really broken through in this country, which is, let me just, aside from the Chinese ownership, it's a great product, right? People love it.
Actually, let's spend a moment because our users differ. Just explain TikTok.
Oh, TikTok. It's essentially a social, it's not social media. It's more media than social. It uses an algorithm. People put up all kinds of videos, whether it's tie-dyeing is big on it, or they do dances or songs, or they're all kinds of stuff. It's so clever.
My daughter, by the way, I have not let her download TikTok.
Yeah, I have a burner phone. I wrote a whole story about how I have a burner phone because I love TikTok. I use public Wi-Fi and a Google burner. I never use a Google phone. And a Google phone on a public Wi-Fi, and I sit there for hours because it's so good. It just is. It's good. And so it's really an enjoyable entertainment. Media, when you say social media, emphasis on media, because it's not because of your friends. You're getting an algorithm of things you like. It's a little more like Amazon. You buy, you know, seaweed snacks and you get this, right? It's more like that, or Netflix, more like that kind of recommendation engine. But it's a magical recommendation engine. It really, truly is. And even, look, try it if you're an adult and use a burner phone like I do, because it's wonderful. Like, it's really wonderful. So it's a great product. It's broken through. And there are issues around, well, now this company, which there's no proof they have stolen data and brought it back to the Chinese government, but you don't need proof in the Trump administration, right? You just say it and then that it's so. And so there's no actual proof, but there is potential, right? Like a lot of things that they could do that.
Well, should there have to be proof, or is it sufficient that you have a regime that's been, you know, as you've said?
It's China, Jake. Sorry, it's China, John. You know, you're not going to find out if the Chinese government is spying. Like, but what would they do with it? Well, I don't know. Maybe location, maybe whatever. It should be a concern, let's just say. But more to the point is that's access. The other is, could there be backdoors into these phones? Possibly. But then again, all our phones are made in China. So maybe that's a concern we should look at, right? So that's possibly a bigger concern. And then, of course, the issue around propaganda and influence is that you keep certain things out, you don't allow certain things on there, and you can use the subtle means of entertainment to propagandize things in ways you don't understand. And so there's all kinds of concerns that it's a Chinese-owned company and it is so popular in the U.S. And so therefore, we should look at it. But the kind of attention that they give to it compared to what they should be paying attention to is just, you know, it's because it's a hot button issue. So it's on the very top of superficial when there's real issues with dealing with China militarily, all kinds of things that, you know, with Huawei and 5G and robotics and, you know, drones, top company's a Chinese company. 5G, top company's a Chinese company. AI, starting to really get real good at it, you know, like really strong in it. Commerce.
Yeah, and I want to turn to that. Before we do, just a couple of thoughts. Actually, it's linked with all those other areas as well, but this just is a good one to use as an example, I think, which is, what do you think about U.S. companies, you know, searching for commercial opportunities like Oracle's recent announcement that it would try to serve. What do you think of Oracle versus Microsoft, and what roles should U.S. companies be playing?
Well, Microsoft wanted to take over the company and move it here and get it out of China. That would be the only way to fix this, right? Like, that's the way to move it out of China, out of Chinese ownership. And of course, the Chinese, they hit back, as what a shock that they would, because the Trump administration can't anticipate anything besides the front of their nose. The Chinese cut it off. So that, well, you can take it out of China, but you can't have the algorithm. Well, it's like I said in the column, it's like selling a car without the engine. Like, okay, that's not worth anything when you have to do that. And by the way, the Chinese keep us out of there, like, quite a lot. And this is a retaliation to that, as it's appalling.
That's an important point, right? So for a long time, it was a one-way street.
Well, not much, because not much got in here. Like, not much got successful. This is the first really successful consumer product from China. Not much got in here. Not much worked. I mean, the U.S. companies dominated the usage by U.S. users. So
you think that's why it was accepted for a period of time?
Yeah, because it's good, too. And so, you know, I think that they came in with a great product, and that's what it is. So Microsoft wanted to buy it, and that would have separated. It would have been a very difficult technological challenge from what I understand. I'm not an expert in the area, but from what I'm talking to Microsoft engineers and stuff. So it would have, you know, forked the code and cleaned it up and created new code, I guess, and then brought it here. What's happening in this deal, I don't understand. Like, it's now still owned by China, so therefore China might back down on the algorithm. But they're going to have a U.S. board of directors and a U.S. control of it, but that doesn't solve the problem. I don't know. Or watching it carefully. Like, so I was like, is Oracle the babysitter of data? Is it the, you know, the mall cop of memes? They're ill-equipped to do that. They're not a consumer company. They're very good on cloud, you know, I guess protecting users' data from going places, or getting in the phone, I guess. It doesn't solve the problem that Trump really loudly said he wanted to solve, which, of course, as is all things, it's all just no execute, all hat, no cattle. Like, okay, China's the threat. None of this solves the problem. And I think, oddly enough, I happen to be on the same side as Josh Hawley and Marco Rubio, which is not a side I'm often on. And so, you know, this doesn't solve the problem of this. And by the way, TikTok isn't really the problem. It's other things. Like, we need to have a major policy thing about how we deal with Chinese influence on our technology. That is a valuable and important thing to talk about, given they are our most potent rival. They're our only rival.
Well, let's talk about, how to do that. And you've talked about, in terms of the mall cop of memes and a way to stop it. What about one way to stop, you know, to try to combat China would be the biggest player in this space, and the kind of Facebook, you've dubbed it the she or me.
Yeah. So Facebook should have no competitors. First of all, TikTok's the first real competitor, Facebook, that's really getting traction. So we don't want to make Facebook stronger. They've bollocked all their power rather handily. So, you know, we want to create an innovative environment. So there's all kinds of things that grow up. That's another issue. That's a separate issue. But we don't want to, like, help Facebook get bigger. That's not the answer to this by any stretch of the imagination, because they've proven themselves to be irresponsible.
Because we had interviewed someone from Facebook, and they were saying essentially that there's an advantage to scale when it comes to setting policies around,
sure,
particularly, you know, what's said on social media. And I think you called it the she or me, referring to the leader of China.
I don't want either of them. I don't want Xi, but I don't want him. Like, is that my choice? If that's my only choice, I gotta say, I'm torn. I gotta say, you know, I guess Mark Zuckerberg, but yeah.
But you had kind of said, you'd raised this kind of earlier as we were starting off, though, because how do you square that, though, with your sense that scale does matter?
Innovation matters. Scale doesn't matter. Innovation matters. There's, of course, we've got to have a federal government that helps our tech companies fight what are nation states. Like, we're asking technology companies to fight nation states. That's hard. That's, you know, we've got to have good cooperation with our government to pass, you know, election security laws to help these companies with these struggles. I mean, I remember talking to someone at Google. It's like, we're fighting China, not the government. And what? Like, nobody elected them, by the way. So, like, what? So I think that we have to have better use of our government resources to help our technology companies in that regard. And at the same time, not have to say they all need to be big in order to beat them. I don't want a big Facebook fighting China. I want our government fighting China. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, nobody elected Mark Zuckerberg, as I recall. I did not vote for him. And so I don't want him to be president of our internet. I don't want any president of the internet. And so the way we have beat other countries in the past is through innovation, not top down, but bottom up. And so the fact that we have three or four really big tech companies that are in the way of innovation, and they are, like, as much as I love Amazon, and I think it's a really innovative company, very few companies are going to be able to pass it because it's so good, right? And it sort of has all the scale. Same thing with Facebook and social media. Same thing with Google. And I like the people who run Google, but they're a lot better, but they're it. They're it in search. And so if you sit and think, like, what I always think about is, when's the last time there was a new company in search? Never. It's Google. That's it. That's what we got. Social media, Snapchat, and until TikTok, Snapchat. And by the way, Facebook has done everything it can to kill Snapchat, right? And steal its ideas and everything else. So that's the last one. In commerce, Walmart can't keep up with Amazon. Walmart has to go to a Canadian company to keep up with Amazon, right? So that's what I'm talking. You need innovation so that new companies can displace, as you talked about, who's going to not exist. Someone has to come up to displace them in every one of these areas, or at least give them a run for their money. And they should not be allowed to operate so that these companies can't exist.
Let's move for a second on that to 5G, which you've mentioned a couple of times. So there are a lot of tools, and you're seeing the government, well, it's below the level of the president, in a pretty organized way, trying to use the tools to make it difficult to deploy Huawei inside the United States. And for just to explain to folks, why don't you explain for a sec what 5G is and why we're concerned about it? And then we could talk a little bit about the fact that right now we've been using more of a stick approach. So there's a Chinese player, Huawei, they're trying to sell a service, and we've been using diplomacy, regulation to make that harder. But that doesn't, to your point, incentivize other players to come up with a technology that's better. And there's a reason why people want to use Huawei. But first, would you spend a minute and just explain 5G and Huawei?
Well, our government used to be partners to this kind of thing. The government created the internet, for goodness sake. You know what I mean? The government created the internet, and therefore we should have a government that helps our technology. Just like the same thing with infrastructure, like, which is very intimately related to, say, autonomous vehicles. We do need an infrastructure plan. I'm waiting for Infrastructure Week to happen. It's, what are we, 3 years in now to this administration?
and counting.
Like, Infrastructure Week, yes, this week. We have to have a government that is as involved as they were in creating the internet. We have to have a government that helps, whether it's through research, whether it's through grants, whether it's through all that kind of stuff. Trust me, China's doing that. So is India. So is everybody but us. And so we have really fallen down on, and then we've left it to these big companies to be the innovators. And that's super hard.
So you think in this space, there should be industrial policy, essentially. We've identified a technology we need and we should, yeah.
Well, there was with major universities. With how we got here is how we should stay here. We got here through these. You think the internet just happened? No, it didn't. It was by major universities. It was with cooperation. It's with research money. Now, right now, there's not a lot of money. So because we have to deal with, recovering from COVID. So there's not going to be investments. But I can tell you, China's making investments every day. They're pumping out. And then there's a link until through the educational systems. They're pumping out so many amazing minds. Well, are we doing that? No. That's the kind of thing. We're keeping immigrants out. Like, what? I mean, the immigration policy is insane from every perspective, including the abuse of the poorest among us, by the way. But think about all the people that used to come here and create companies. The head of Microsoft, immigrant. Elon Musk, immigrant. Sundar Pichai, immigrant. This is, you could go Sergey Brin, immigrant. Like, come on.
So you're saying we got a playbook. We've used it before. Let's go back to it.
That's how we won. So, and it works every time. And it works because, unlike China, unlike Russia, we are a bottom-up democratic system, even though it feels really strained right now. We are a democratic system. We will always prevail by diversity, openness, tolerance, open to ideas, helped by government, but not like government planning, right? We don't want the government to plan things because that's not where ideas come from.
Well, let me pause here because you've spent so much time, in the Valley interviewing folks, and now you've moved back to Washington, D.C., presumably because the weather is so much better here.
No, my kids are here. I wish I was in San Francisco. Despite all the terrible things that are happening there, I love San Francisco. I miss it.
Yeah, man, I thought I was going to have the first person saying positive things about living in Washington, D.C.
It's fine. I feel my mind getting less and less innovative as I'm here, but that's okay.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to push on, because you're saying, you know, we want the government to play more of a role. If we're going to win, we need the government to help back universities, help back research. But there are many people who would say, that's the kiss of death. And as soon as you want to stop innovation, have the government come to help.
No, not run things. Facilitate, fund, facilitate, encourage states, not just federal government.
Well, what's like two things they should be doing now? Like, how could they help facilitate it?
I mean, look at the mess of the CDC. That used to be the golden, you know, example of innovation by government. And then it slowed everywhere. Now it's just a place where the Trump administration rewrites the press releases, like, without science background. I mean, come on. We have all kinds of institutions, whether it's the NIH, whether it's, you know, we have so many institutions.
And you should create one for cyber, essentially?
Well, yeah, well, I think there should be one. But there is, you know, the NSA. We have all kinds of stuff like that. But
well, the NSA does have a different mission, right? It'd be odd if the NSA was the National Security Agency. Just by name alone, there'd probably be a lot of problem giving grants. But
right, but there's all kinds of really innovative people within those industries, and also there's a facilitation element to it. You know, the Pell Grants, by the way, helped a lot, helped our country much more than the money it was spent. It was like de minimis the money we spent with the benefit we got. Just good immigration policies, not just bringing in, look, the thing that Trump is pushing is let's bring in the smart people. Well, we've always brought in the smart people, but we have to bring in everyone because we don't know who the smart people could be, right? There's a little girl on the border, you know, that has the answer to cancer or whatever. I don't know. Like, that's the idea, is open borders, not open borders, but, you know, doing it in a way that facilitates the most openness we can in order to bet on innovation and the best people coming here to do whatever. And it's not just innovation in tech, it's innovation in everything. Like, we want people here to think that this country is, our doors are open for innovative people to come here and create all kinds of things. It's a basic concept. And then there is the helping government, helping universities and other research institutions create things. All the best of our things have come from, like, the space travel right now is privatized, whether it's Elon or Jeff Bezos or whoever. You know, NASA gave us so much innovation in terms of this kind of thing, and now it's being privatized, much like the internet was. And so there's always a way to complain about government and not doing it right, and the $2,000 screwdriver or whatever. But it is also a place that can foster and facilitate and encourage innovation of the private sector. And that private-public relationship is such an important one. And I think it's not this sort of pillaring of the government, you know, or saying that it's a deep state or whatever. It does not take into account by how much the government has helped and how much it could help if it does what it does best, which is fund, facilitate, and get out of the way of the innovation of the American people. And I mean that broadly, the American people, not just people from America.
So fund, facilitate, and get out of the way. But let's move a little bit to what you're talking about before, which is there are powerful companies right now that are huge, and another authority of the government is breaking them up. You could fund, facilitate, get out of the way, but then, you know, you look at a market, if it gets too big, break it up. Should you break up the so-called FANG, you know, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Google, Netflix?
Netflix, no. You shouldn't break up Netflix. No, Netflix is not doing anything. There's tons of competition for Netflix, trust me. Now Amazon.
So which companies should be broken up?
I think we have to think about what antitrust is, right? We need to do that first. Like, we haven't thought that since the Sherman Antitrust Act, which back from a century ago, right? So, like, let's start there. Start really thinking. Oh, same thing with the Section 230. Let's start rethinking it. Doesn't mean we have to get rid of it. That's, of course, what a lot of people want. I'm like, no, we have to really rethink it for the modern age. So that's for the first place, is to start thinking about something called policy, which we don't do as much anymore. Policies.
One of the things that I think you're particularly good at is, and this was an issue we've talked about before, but is translating geek. And so what I found a little bit, what's your sense in terms of policy? You know, there are people in Congress who are supposed to write laws. How do you think they understand the technology in this space?
Yes. You know what? They manage to regulate Wall Street. I don't think they're all financiers. They manage to regulate cars. I don't think they're engineers. They manage to regulate planes. Planes don't fall out of the sky that much. A little bit more than they should, but they don't that much. You know what I mean? Like, they're capable of doing this. And there are a lot of experts all throughout the government. Yes, yes. I don't buy that argument that they're dumb and that we should let private industry do everything. Because it's not in the interest of private industry to do everything right. Because it's in their interest to make money, right? So government isn't there to make money. It's there to facilitate and help its citizens at its very best. And so, you know, antitrust, here's a good example. Should Amazon have a marketplace and also sell things that compete with the marketplace and have unnecessary advantage? Everyone says no, no. Like, should it make like batteries and then suddenly Duracell is screwed if it doesn't sell on Amazon, if Amazon's the only platform? You need to look at that. There's no, I mean, anyone who understands that, should there, Google have 90 some percent of a search market and then also all of a sudden go into recommendations and beating up on Yelp or whoever? Should Apple have an app store where it decides what the prices are with no other ability? The only other app store is the Google app store. So it's a duopoly. No, right? There should, I don't know what the solution for each of those problems are. And the same thing with Facebook. Like, the stuff they're uncovering in this House committee, it's David Cicilline's committee, what they're uncovering is like talking about neutralizing competitors, land grabs and things like that. No, that doesn't, that's unfair advantage. And I think that's where government can step in. And I don't know, I think our problem is we always say, oh, we should break them up. That's not the only solution. Sometimes there needs to be breakup. Sometimes there needs to be fines. That's a good way to do it. Like, look, Facebook was fined for doing what it always does. It always continues to violate advertising and privacy thing constantly since its beginning. So we warn them first, and then we really warn them, and then we warn them again, and they signed a consent decree, and then they broke it again. And so what do we fine them? $5 billion. I think Mark Zuckerberg has that in his drawer at home, right? That's nothing to this corporation. Fine them 50.
So does that mean bigger? It's not that fines don't work. It just needs to be bigger.
Yes, fine them 50. Oh, they'll pick their heads up if we say 50, and then take that 50 and fund the FTC. Give it to the FTC for more investigators and watchdogs. Not too many, but enough to watch them. There are only 300 people there for the whole country. Facebook has 300 PR people in Washington alone, I'm sure. Right? So come on. Like, and how many hundreds and hundreds of lawyers they have. So that's another one. Fines. Antitrust applied correctly. Fines. Regulations that exist that we're enforcing finally. Creating new regulations under something.
Yeah, because you've raised two issues. There's the antitrust and the too big. And then second, you're also bringing up privacy. And you've written before, we should be paranoid about privacy.
So have regulations. Have good have thoughtful regulations where we talk to these companies, we talk to citizens, we talk to all the interested parties and create, again, policy around it, like smart policy. It's not going to be perfect, but it's certainly better than nothing, which is what we have now. And then, so that's policy. That's regulations that exist and are enforced and regulations that we can create, like a national privacy bill. And by the way, fund the government institutions that are in charge of this. Give them adequate funding so that they do it. The FTC is woefully underfunded. The FEC is completely underfunded. Like, come on, like give them, you know, government is too big, but some parts of government aren't too big, especially when they're trying to monitor. Create new laws around hacking, there's all kinds of things you could do. Correct ads, you know, ads that aren't deceptive, transparency, things like that. And then two more things. One, the media, like, which has been pretty tough on tech companies, that they have a job to do, which is monitoring and keeping them honest, that kind of thing, like doing that and doing their job. And there's been some amazing reporting by all kinds of people, whether it's on content moderators, whether it's on QAnon, whether it's on, you know, Kevin Roos from the New York Times does an amazing job showing what a right-wing platform Facebook has become. Especially when the right wing says they aren't being heard. That's a lot. That's a whole lot of bullshit.
I was fascinated by that. Let me just pause on that for a sec. You cover a lot quickly, which is why it's great. Great having you on. But do you think were you convinced by the reporting that right now Facebook is really more of a tool for the right wing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, come on. Facebook has its own device that they've used that unfortunately bought this device that shows exactly what's happening on this platform. The top 10 stories are all virulently right-wing, you know, like very right-wing. It's like Breitbart, Ben, whatever his name is, Shapiro, and then it goes down and then you finally get to like the New York Times somewhere.
And is that, you know, a feature or a flaw? Does that reflect the marketplace of ideas and those ideas won?
No, I think it's just the way they design it. You know, I don't know. But I'm just saying the argument that their voices aren't getting out there, they never shut up. That's my impression is I never stop hearing from them. So if they're being like somehow censored, I don't see it because I wish I didn't have to hear them that much. But I can turn that off myself. I can self-censor. I don't want the government to do that. Like I don't want, you know, what I do want Facebook and Twitter knows to do is to do their rules. If people break their rules, to do something about it, not getting wrapped around the First Amendment axle. They're not the government. So I want them to, if they have rules and people break them, I want them to enforce the rules. I think that's a very normal thing to ask for.
And you wrote, do you think some are doing a better job than others?
Twitter has started, but here we are in the year of our Lord 2020, and they're finally putting, this is a lie. This is tweet is lie. Oh, well, thank you for that. Finally, you know, and then of course, Trump had a Vesuvius-like eruption for being called out on what was an obvious lie or a deception. Like, why does he get to walk down Fifth Avenue and shoot people? He doesn't.
If we have a new president after the election, how would you advise a President Biden on policy, what are top three ideas they should push on?
I want everyone to take a frigging pause and like, look, President Trump has showed the uses of something like Twitter or things, and to really think thoughtfully about what are the most important lists of things we need to do, which includes, and bring in great minds, bring in people that drive Silicon Valley crazy, like Elizabeth Warren, who like she has seemed, Mark Zuckerberg called her Facebook's existential threat. Can you believe that? She was the existential threat to Facebook. I thought climate change would be on the top of his list. Death. Elizabeth Warren, are you kidding me? Like, really? Just because she's saying, hey, this is a little bit sketchy. I mean, they're scared because she's so smart.
So she's talked specifically, Senator Warren, about legislation that would require large platforms to be designated as platform utilities.
Yeah, she's just trying to scare him. She's scaring him. She's Teddy Roosevelt. She's scaring him. And she will do something about it if she gets in power, certainly.
And by the way, she used the specific example you did about batteries and Duracell.
Well, yeah, like, well, I don't want to protect Duracell necessarily, but it shouldn't be that, like, Bezos admitted in the thing that maybe some of the information got over to the other side. Like, maybe the wall leaked somehow, you know, the wall between the information that the selling site gets to the seller site, you know, like, of course it leaked, you know, I dare you to do a search on Amazon to buy like a brand. The minute you do that, their knockoff cheaper version comes up.
No, it's true. And, you know, I'll confess, I usually end up buying it.
The minute. Yes, because it's much cheaper. And that's a question. You want to have an argument about brand, that's fine. You're right. Brands cost too much kind of thing, but certain brands don't. But that's a different thing. So in any case, their argument is they're not the only platform. Okay, but right now retail's been decimated by COVID, so they are going to be. They're essentially have gotten bigger and more powerful through this COVID crisis. But the last thing I want to talk about is the responsibility of citizenry to really stop being such patsies and being so ignorant. Because guess what? You have a responsibility not to pass on shitty information. You have a responsibility to question the information that's coming through. You have the information not to be so ridiculously dumb. Like, you have a responsibility as a citizen of the United States of America not to pass on bad information, like not to create fear, not to, you know, just the way you're supposed to wear masks. Like, come on. This is not what Patrick Henry died for. So that you had, this is not, you're not, you can't be homicidal and suicidal at the same time to your fellow citizens. You have a responsibility as a citizen to not fall prey to this, even though I have to say it's super hard because it's addictive and it's confusing and you're being hit with a flood of misinformation and disinformation. And that is really hard in this society to deal with. It's not like a billboard that you pass on the street. This is constant and exhausting, but you still can do a better job as citizens. That's my feeling. Like, not that you should have to do it your own because the chips are stacked against you in this particular fight, but there is a certain amount of basic intelligence that you have to bring to bear that every citizen should have. Like, let me give you an example. A friend of mine, and I've used this before, lived in Indiana, lives in DC now, and there was a Facebook group for this town in Indiana, and all of a sudden, during these protests, all of a sudden, this small town in Indiana was saying, Antifa is coming here in buses and they're going to wreck our downtown, right? And it's not true. This is, I've read it. Here's some links. This was all Russia propaganda that they were passing on, all of it. And it was made to look like it wasn't, but it was. They're going to come in our town. They're going to do this. And my friend was like, look, let me just try to stop you all. Like, they're not coming. There's no caravan buses of Antifa coming into your town. nobody wants to come to this town. Everyone wants to leave this town. So I don't understand why you think they want to come and do this one particular small town in Indiana and wreck its downtown. They don't. There's nothing happening. This is all, stop passing on this information. And then when it didn't happen, and they're like, get guns, you know, put boards up, all kinds of craziness. And this is an analog situation. And by the way, it's worse in other countries where actual killings happen. You know what I mean? People take physical action based on bad information online. When it didn't happen, when the busload of Antifa didn't show up, which they don't, you know, for the most part, there's no busload of them. There's just not happening. It's not, George Soros is not funding busloads of Antifa to go around and wreck downtowns
in Indiana.
It's not happening, people of Indiana. You can relax. But when it didn't happen, she was like on there like, see, it didn't happen. They're like, oh, but we stopped it. And it was like, what? Like, so the second lie took place. They couldn't just say we're stupid. Boy, were we fooled. They couldn't just say we're a dumb group of people from Indiana that got fooled by stupid internet memes. They couldn't just do that. Like, come on. Like, at some point, stop being a big giant baby and have a responsibility as an adult to know when you made a mistake.
Given your voice on tech, do you think you're reaching the right audiences? So like, how do you reach that town to explain to them? Because look, it is a little crazy, right? That you look at a device or you read content on it and it looks like it's coming from a fellow citizen. It's well-produced, it's slick. You know, your first thought isn't, oh, this is a Russian troll farm. That almost seems like science fiction, except it's happening all the time now. So
there's also addiction elements to it. Like it becomes addictive. So what you have to understand is that it's systemic. And what's the deal you're making for the information you're getting? Like, I think people have to think really, this is how I've started to think about it. I'm thinking about writing a column about this. Look, if you go, and I've used this example before of a meat market, like whatever, but when you go on a plane, you don't expect it to fall out of the sky, right? You have a trust that there are government people that are making sure that it's, most of these things are safe and they're not big. Look, Boeing got in a big trouble over it's that kind of stuff because of reporting, by the way. You have a trust in the meat you buy from the meat market is not going to kill you. Because you have a feeling that this is being taken care of. Now, sometimes it's not, by the way, but you have a responsibility then to press your elected officials to make sure that they are watching. You have a responsibility, is all I'm saying, is even though it's really hard and it's systemic, you also have a responsibility to understand what trade you're making. When you get a free map or you get a dating app or you get, you know, whatever, you're giving up enormous amounts of your data to do that. And so you're like, I like it. No one's following me. You know, that's the kind of thing I always get. Like, no one's following me. I have nothing to hide. Well, it doesn't matter if you have nothing to hide. You shouldn't be followed. Like, you should know. And so we did it to one person where we followed them and showed them how much information we had on them. And once they realize they have nothing to hide, it doesn't really matter if they have nothing to hide. They shouldn't have to hide anything, right? They should have the knowledge that people are not using their data to make money. And what I always point out is, you've gotten a free map or a dating service or whatever, and they've got billions, and they've the richest people on the planet in the history of the planet. Their company is the most powerful, unaccountable companies in the history of the planet. But you got a dating app and you got a map. Like, do you think that's a good trade on your, are you a patsy or what? Like, that's what I always say. I'm like, you're dumb.
It's kind of interesting when you're comparing it to regulation of, you know, food in terms of the meat industry, the airline industry. And last guest was a former colleague of mine from the National Security Agency who explicitly said we should be treating cyber the way we do airlines. So it's,
why not?
Yeah. So
why?
What you're saying is a little, you know, you're saying on the one hand, people need to take responsibility, but that responsibility might be calling for government action.
That's right. It's your, like, you know, just don't sit there looking at your friggin' phone. Like, this is your... I don't like to say people always say, oh, you're the product. I don't think that's it at all. I don't think you're the product. But I do think that it is designed to pull you in. It is designed to enrage you. You need to start demanding that our government at least start to point out to your friends and family, like, this is not here to help you. It is here to facilitate more capitalism and in terrible cases to facilitate really malevolent actions by other countries who do not like us. The Russians are not our friends. I don't know what to say to you. Like, why can't we investigate? Why is there a pushback on investigating Russian? Why is there a denial of it? Like, they don't like us. They are not our friends. They never were, right? Now, we can get along with them and we can have, you know, all kinds of relationships with all kinds of countries. The Chinese aren't our friends, right? Like, you know, and some people in this country aren't our friends and they want to manipulate us. And so you have to be much more aware of this system being able to manipulate you. And sometimes it's designed to be irresistible and you have every right to understand they're trying to addict you and enrage you. And it's built that way. Sometimes it's built that way to sell you toilet paper. Sometimes it's built that way to get you to make a political action that is not based in fact. Sometimes it's designed to give you bad health information. But in the end, you are the victim of that and have some responsibility. I think most responsibility is on government, by the way, but you also have a responsibility as an American citizen who's given the most freedom of most people in this whole world to take responsibility.
Kara Swisher, thank you very much. And appreciate that call to action.
I'm ranting. You got me on a rant. I'm sorry.
No, if your passion comes through and it's why you're such a successful voice in this space and journalist and really unique in your ability to take these abstract issues and make them real. So thanks for appearing today.
All right, John. Thank you so much. I'll stop ranting.
Cyberspace is presented by Cafe. Your host is John Carlin. The executive producer is Tamara Sepper. The senior producer is Adam Waller. The senior audio producer is David Tadashor. And the Cafe team is Matthew Billy, Nat Wiener, Sam Oserstaden, David Kurlander, Noah Azulai, Jake Kaplan, Calvin Lord, Jeff Eisenman, Chris Boylan, Sean Walsh, and Margot Malley. The music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Today's episode was brought to you in collaboration with Brooklyn Law School's Blip Clinic. Special thanks to Amanda Kadish, Isabella Augusto, Jordan Korshad, and Jacqueline Green.